"Oh, Jamie, that hurt," Peter said, rubbing his shoulder.
"What have you done?"
I roared. "Only what I had to," he said, and he was serious in a way that I rarely witnessed. "Nobody will take you from me, Jamie." I could have killed him then. The rage surged up, pulsed in my blood like fire. I should have killed him then. It would have prevented everything that came after. Peter took a half step back, just a little shuffle, but he'd never retreated from me before. Never. He realized this immediately and stepped back toward me, but I was already turning, already running. Charlie was more important than dealing with Peter.
"I don't know why you're bothering to run," Peter shouted after me. "It will be already done by now."
I didn't care what he said. Until I saw Charlie, I wouldn't believe Nip had succeeded in whatever task Peter set him. I believed, I had to believe, that Del and Nod and Fogg would look after him as I asked. I ran, and the terror swamped my anger. And the fear that I would be too late drove me on, faster and faster. I cut into the forest, never wishing so much that I could fly as Peter did at that moment. My legs burned, and my chest heaved, and my hair was soaked in sweat. And I ran. The forest held no joy for me now. It was only an obstacle in the way, a thing that kept me from Charlie. I'd promised him he'd be safe. He had to be all right. He had to be. I ran, and Charlie's tiny face turned back to look at me as Del led him away. And his face said he was trying so hard to be brave. I didn't think about his blue eyes empty or his yellow duck-feathered hair matted with blood. I didn't think of those things. And I ran faster. I burst into the clearing before the tree, gasping for air, and I was so wild with anxiety that it took me a moment to realize what I was seeing. All the boys were gathered in a still, silent circle. All but two of them. One of them was tied to a stake that was driven into the ground. His face and chest were a mass of purpling bruises, but he was still alive. The other one lay on the ground. He was white and still, and he would never get up again. The pool of blood underneath him told me that. "Oh, Del," I said, and knuckled away the tears, because I didn't cry in front of the others. "Oh, Del." His sword was in his hand, lying limp in his open palm. He'd fought, or tried to. I was proud of him for that.
"Jamie!"
Charlie ran to me, and I picked him up without even thinking about it. He trembled all over, and his eyes were red and swollen because he was too small to stop himself from crying in front of the boys.
"He saved me," Charlie said, weeping into my neck. "He protected me."
I let Charlie cry because I couldn't. Not just then, not while the boys were watching, not while Nip was watching me with a sneer in his eyes, even though he was tied to that pole. Nod and Fogg separated themselves from the others and came to me. They seemed unsure whether to be ashamed about Del or proud that they'd caught and tied up Nip. "He went for Charlie so fast," Nod said. "Didn't even think he could move that fast," Fogg said. "Del was right next to Charlie, and he was taking out his sword as he got in Nip's way," Nod said. "Nip never got a finger on Charlie," Fogg said. "Not one. Del got off one slash." Here he pointed at an ugly wound in Nip's thigh. "But Nip got Del's throat before Del could do anything else. Then we caught on to what was happening and jumped on Nip, and us and the others pounded him good and proper, because we can't have boys just killing other boys. That's not how it works here." The rest of the boys murmured in agreement. "We were just having a trial before we hung Nip, because that's what you're supposed to do, Billy says," said Nod. "You're supposed to tell your story in front of a judge, and then the judge says you're guilty, and then you're hung in the town square," Billy said proudly.
I saw a hanging once. The fellow's neck didn't break when he fell, like it was supposed to, and his legs were kicking around, and his face was purple for a long time before he died.
All the boys turned to look at Nip, as if imagining him kicking and turning blue at the end of a rope. None of them seemed particularly troubled by the idea.
"We were just deciding who should be the judge," Nod said.
"I think it should be me," Fogg said, "because I noticed him killing Del first."
"No, I did," Nod said, and punched Fogg in the shoulder.
"No, I did," Fogg said, punching back.
I knew it was a short walk from this to the two of them rolling around on the ground, bloodying each other's noses. I shifted Charlie to my left arm and moved to break them apart with my right.
Nip's laugh, slow and congested, he was laughing through broken teeth, cut in before I could. We all turned as one to stare at him.
"Ain't none of you going to judge me," he said. "Peter told me to do it, and he's not about to let me swing from any rope when I'm just doing what I was told."
Nod broke away first, running at Nip and punching him in the face. Nip's head cracked against the pole from the force of the blow.
"You're a liar," Nod shouted.
Fogg, who hated to miss out on anything his brother did, followed suit, punching Nip's other cheek and shouting,
"Liar, liar, liar! Peter would never do that!"
"That's outside of the rules," Nod said.
"It's not fair play," Fogg said. "If we have something to settle, we go to Peter or Jamie, and if fighting's needed, real fighting, we save it for battle."
"Yeah, we don't stab the other boys just because we feel like it," Nod said, "and those are Peter's rules, so we know you're nothing but a dirty liar."
The other boys nodded, and the general feeling was that Nip's lie about Peter was almost worse than his killing Del. I knew it wasn't a lie. I knew, but I wasn't about to save Nip. Nip's eyes darted around the closing circle of boys, all of them ready to carve their piece of flesh from the liar in their midst.
"It's true," Nip shouted, desperate now. The sneer was all gone, and the knowledge that Peter might not be back in time to save him was dawning.
He was a wreck of himself, covered in the evidence of two beatings, but his strength, or fear, was so powerful that he was able to shift the stake a little as he wrenched to and fro, trying to break free from the ropes that bound him.
"I'm not a liar," he screamed.
Nip looked right at Charlie and me, who'd ceased his sobbing and stared at the bigger boy with blank eyes. Charlie didn't much care if they hung Nip either.
"Peter told me to take care of that little brat, and if he was here, he'd tell you so. If you hurt me, you'll be sorry."
"No, he won't," Nod said, shaking his head. "You broke the rules. Jamie knows the rules better than anyone," Fogg said, and turned to me for assent.
"Yes, you broke the rules," I said. I didn't say that Peter would never tell Nip to go after Charlie. I couldn't bring myself to speak the lie.
Fogg nodded. "Jamie's passed judgment. We'll hang you now."
"I'll get some rope," Billy said happily and ran off to the tree.
We stole rope from the pirates regularly, as it was handy for things like setting snares and much sturdier than vine ropes we sometimes wove. In a trice, Billy had fashioned a hangman's noose and thrown it over a branch of the tree. He fixed the rope around the branch in such a way so they could toss it over Nip's neck, and then pull the rope, with Nip in it, of course, up from the ground, sort of a pulley with Nip on one end and the boys on the other. The rest of the boys surrounded Nip. Fogg cut him loose from the stake. Nip immediately tried to fight his way out of the crowd, but he was so wild that none of his blows landed. The boys were able to subdue him easily and dragged him, screaming, incoherently, to his noose.
"Stop making so much noise," Fogg said, and stuffed a filthy rag from his pocket into Nip's open mouth.
Nip's eyes widened and he tried to shout through the rag, the result being a kind of intense grunting that made the other boys laugh. A couple of them picked up sticks and poked him to see what other noises Nip might make.
"I don't want you to look when they string him up," I told Charlie.
I was reluctant to put him down again, sure that if I did, I'd find out that it wasn't Del's body in the middle of the clearing, but his.
"Okay, Jamie," Charlie said. "I'll mind you." I remembered the way I'd lost my temper with him at the bottom of the cliff path. It seemed so long ago, and it was only yesterday. "I don't want you to have nightmares," I said by way of explanation. Charlie nodded and turned his head away when the boys finished poking at Nip and put the rope around his neck. Nod and Fogg and three others grabbed the trailing end of the rope and pulled. Nip let out his longest scream yet, muffled by the rag. They only managed to pull him far enough so his heels dragged in the dirt, even with five of them putting their backs into it. Nod gave a count to heave again in 3, 2, 1, and Peter bounded across the clearing in 2 jumps. If any other boy had been looking, they would know his secret in that instant. It was quite obvious he wasn't leaping like an ordinary boy. He pushed into the fray and cut Nip down before the others realized he was even there. Nip collapsed in the dirt, clawing the noose off his neck and yanking the rag from his mouth. All the boys chorused, "Ah!" for Peter had spoiled their fun.
"What's all this, then?"
Peter said sternly, looking around at all of us. His eyes rested on Charlie a moment longer than the others. I saw the flicker of disappointment in them. But then, I was looking for it. Nod and Fogg rushed to tell what happened. I'd been standing a little apart from the rest, but now I set Charlie down and joined them. Of course, the smaller boy immediately wound his fist into my coat. But I couldn't blame him for that after Dell. Peter avoided my gaze. He also didn't glance at Dell once. Now that Dell was dead, he was no longer interesting to Peter. If anything, Peter was likely relieved that Dell had died before coughing out his lungs and annoying him with the noise. Nip smirked up at the others. He obviously thought that Peter's last-minute rescue confirmed his specialness. I had a feeling he was in for a big surprise on that front. Nod and Fogg finished telling the story, tumbling over each other in the rush to be first, but Peter got the sense of it. When the twins finished, Nip broke in before Peter could speak.
"I told them," Nip said, "that I was only doing what you told me to do."
I think he would have liked to drawl this out in a self-satisfied way, but the effect was ruined by his swollen face, missing front teeth, and the need to spit out blood every third word or so. Peter's eyes went wide when Nip finished speaking. He appeared astonished at this news.
"I?" he said, pointing his thumb to his chest. "I told you to kill Dell? I never did!"
His outrage was almost believable. If you didn't know what I knew. The other boys were nodding and muttering that they knew Nip had lied about that.
"No!"
Nip said, his face twisted in frustration. He still believed Peter would support him, that Peter would tell the truth when it came down to it. He didn't know Peter the way I did.
"You told me to take care of that little yellow-haired brat, and I was trying to, except that skinny one got in my way."
Nip jerked his chin in the direction of Dell's corpse. "I told you to take care of Charlie," Peter said with exaggerated care.
"Look after him. He's very small, and you're very big. I never told you to lunge at him with a knife."
I saw then how Peter had done it, that he'd likely said those precise words, "Take care of Charlie." This was how he'd set Nip to the task instead of doing it himself, so he could deny it all if Nip failed. Nip scowled at Peter like he couldn't believe what Peter was saying.
"You never did. You told me to take care of the brat, and you knew just what you were telling me to do, and it wasn't anything to do with looking after."
"Don't call Peter a liar," Nod said, and ran at Nip. He landed on the bigger boy's stomach with his bony knees. Nip oofed out all his air and had no chance to get it back as Nod pounded his face.
"Peter's no liar. You are!"
Peter pointed to Jonathan and Ed.
"You two, get Nod off him."
He put out a restraining arm to stop Fogg from joining in the scrum. Jonathan and Ed dragged Nod off Nip, though it seemed to me they did so very slowly. Nobody was much interested in Nip's well-being.
"Get up," Peter told Nip.
Peter wasn't concerned for Nip's well-being either. I knew how Peter thought. Nip had failed, and now he was no longer valuable to Peter. The other boy would have to prove his worth again, or else spend all the rest of his days on the island on the wrong side of Peter's attention. Nip struggled to his feet, his nose freshly bloodied, his mean little eyes in their swollen sockets darting around for an ally and finding none. "Now," Peter said, his hands on his hips, and gave us his best angry glare. "Rules have been broken. First rule is that we don't kill each other outside of battle. That's not our way." Nip opened his mouth to speak, to defend himself, to say again that he was only doing as he'd been told. Peter waved a dismissive hand at him and talked louder. "Nip killed Del, but the rest of you are going to hang Nip for it, which means you broke the rules too." All the boys seemed slightly ashamed now. Not for hurting Nip, necessarily, but for getting carried away. "Nip's done wrong, and so have you. That means there must be a battle." A murmur started up immediately. The new boys weren't sure what battle was, and the older boys speculated that battle wasn't quite fair with Nip in the condition he was in. "You're right," Peter said. "Nip should have a chance to heal, so it'll be fair." He put his hand on his chin and twisted his mouth, this way and that, as he took in Nip's injuries. "What do you think, Jamie? 30 sleeps? That was overly generous to my way of thinking, though there was always the hope that Nip would catch a fever and die before battle day. 20, I said, just to show Peter he couldn't lead me by the nose. He shook his head. 30. We'll mark the days off on a board. One of you find a good piece of wood for marking." This was exactly the sort of task I'd like to set Charlie on, but his hand clung to my coat in a way that said he would never let go. Anyway, I didn't want him out of my sight until after battle was over. I wasn't so sure Peter wouldn't plan something else now that his first idea had failed. One of the new boys, Sam, I think, scampered off to find a board. I realized with a pang that there were now as many new boys as old. We'd lost both Harry and Del in the last day. It was down to me, Nod, Fogg, Jonathan, Kit, and Ed. The rest had been there less than a week. And knowing that, knowing they didn't know a damn thing about battle, I knew what would happen when next Peter spoke. "When Nip's healed up, one of you will fight him to death in battle. Then this disagreement will be ended forever." "I will," I said, before Nod or Fogg could volunteer. They both loved battle, whether it was in play or to the death, and surely both of them had more cause to fight than me. I hadn't even been there when they tied Nip to the stake. But it was my lot to stand for the boys, to look out for them. Nod and Fogg were good fighters, but Nip was much bigger than them, and he'd have more reason to fight and win, for he'd feel his reputation as truth-teller was at stake. There was a slyness about him, too, that told me he'd try for any advantage in a fight. Nod and Fogg weren't sneaky fighters, but I was. I'd do whatever was necessary to survive. We were the same that way, Nip and me. And it came down to this. I wouldn't lose the twins, too, not after what had passed in the last day. "Jamie, no," Charlie whispered, tugging at my coat. Peter gave me a curious look, one that I couldn't read. "Why should you be the one, Jamie? You weren't even here for the first part of it." "I," Nod said. "It ought to be me." "No," Fogg said. "It ought to be me." Of course, the expected thing happened. I shouted over the noise of them punching and arguing. "It will be me because I'm the one who passed judgment," I said. And they stopped trying to hurt each other to stare at me. "I stand for all the boys." "But Jamie," Fogg said. "No," I said. "It's me." They both sighed. "I suppose it's only fair since you were the judge," Nod said.
"But Jamie, I could take him," Fogg said.
Fogg knew, or thought he knew, why I was putting myself in front of him. "I know you could," I said, "but it will be me all the same." Nip squinted at me, and I could tell he was already working out the best way to kill me. His thoughts were so plain, anyone could read them without trying. I showed him nothing. I knew better. Anyway, he'd have a hard go of it, trying to kill me. I'd been on the island much, much longer than he knew. Peter looked from me to Nod to Fogg to Nip, and then heaved a great sigh, as though he hadn't intended for it to end that way all along. Me against Nip, his right hand against the boy who wanted to take my place. "Very well," he said in that pretend grown-up voice he used when he wanted to be serious. "Nip against Jamie, 30 sleeps from now. Sam, you're in charge of marking off the days. When you wake up in the morning, put a line on that board with a rock." Sam nodded. He looked eager to be part of this, but glad that he had a meaningful part to play that wouldn't involve blood or death. The circle of boys broke up and nobody seemed to know quite what to do with himself. The game was supposed to end with Nip kicking from the end of a rope until he was still. Since it hadn't ended that way, none of the boys wanted to look Nip in the eye. I wondered what would become of Nip until battle day. He hadn't made a place for himself among the boys before this, and he seemed unlikely to now. It's hard to make friends with someone who tried to hang you. Del's body lay in the center of the clearing, and Peter pretended it wasn't there as he walked by. "Who wants to swim with the mermaids?" he shouted, just as if nothing of import had happened. There was a loud hurrah from Billy, and the others joined in the chorus. They appeared relieved that Peter was giving them something to do besides think about recent events. I didn't point out that it was nearly sundown and that sharks sometimes swam into the lagoon after dark, making the mermaids scatter. I didn't say that the boys had just returned from a long, pointless trek to Bear Cave and back and needed to sleep and eat so they wouldn't do foolish things that might get them killed. I didn't say anything at all, though it was clear Peter expected me to do so. He wanted so badly to tell me off for babying them, for spoiling their fun, but I wouldn't bite his bait. I watched them go, Peter in the lead, the rest already forgetting Del. Soon the only boys left in the clearing were Charlie and Nip and me. Nip turned and limped inside the tree to lick his wounds, just like a bear and just as dangerous. I picked up Del's body. He was already cold and stiff, and carried him out to the place where I buried the boys we lost. Charlie trailed behind me, a little yellow-feathered duckling, and he patted my shoulder when I put Del in the ground and wept like I would never stop. Chapter 8. The boys didn't return until almost morning. Charlie and I chose to sleep outside in the clearing by the fire. Nip was likely too damaged to be much of a threat, but I wasn't risking Charlie over that belief. It was only sense to stay away from him when the others were gone. The night was fine and cool, the neverbirds calling to one another in long sing-song cries. Charlie tucked himself right up against me like a roly-poly bug and went to sleep. I lay awake for a while listening to him and the night breathing all around me, and wondered how Peter could fly. I thought we would take a boat to the island, but Peter took me to a secret place, so secret that it didn't look like anything at first, and I thought he was teasing me. We had to go outside the city, a long way, and I was tired when we got there, so tired, but Peter kept smiling and clapping and telling me it'd be wonderful. So I kept going, even when I wanted to close my eyes and fall down. When we got to the secret place, there was a big tree, and a hole between two thick roots that jutted out of the ground. "In there," he said, and pointed. I thought for sure then that he'd tricked me. "That's nothing but a hole in the ground," I said, and could hear the tears in my voice. "No, no, it's not," he said, and he was so earnest that I believed him again. "It's magic, and only we know that it's here." He came next to me and put his arm around my shoulder and pointed up over the top of the tree. The tree was very big, bigger than some of the houses in the city, and right above it were two stars. One of them was very bright, and one of them was smaller.
"It's because of that star," he said. "That second star to the right. That star shines over my island and shines over this tree, and if you go inside, you'll come out on the island on the other side."
He must have seen me doubting, because he said, "I'll go first and you follow." Well, that seemed a little better to me. If he went first, that meant that he wouldn't stand outside the hole and pour dirt on me and laugh, which had seemed a possibility. He dashed into the hole and slithered inside so fast I hardly saw him. I stood there, unsure if I should follow or not, as there still seemed the chance of a trick. His head popped out of the hole again like a jack-in-the-box, and his green eyes gleamed in the starlight.
"Come on, Jamie, follow me. Follow me and you'll never grow up."
I took one step, then another, and then I was inside, and the earth seemed to close all around me. The whooping and hollering woke me first, and then the wind brought the smell of the sea ahead of them. They tumbled wild-eyed out of the forest, and many of them just collapsed once they were within sight of the tree. I sat up and grabbed Fogg's ankle as he danced by, full of mermaid songs. "Where's Peter?"
"Went to the other place," Fogg said. "Said he had to find new boys to make up for Harry and Dell."
I let Fogg go, and he fell to his knees and then flat on his face, snoring before his nose even touched the dirt. Peter had gone to the other place without me. Again. The last time he'd brought back Nip, a choice he'd known I would never approve. It was clear now that the reason for that was to find a boy with just the right qualities, one who wouldn't be troubled about slashing a 5-year-old's throat. I soothed Charlie down again. The ruckus of the boy's return had him sitting up and rubbing his eyes, and soon he was asleep like the others. The air filled with the sleeping breath of boys, their dreams dusted by the glow of the moon. I stayed awake the rest of the night, watching that cold eye, and wondered what sort of boys Peter would return with this time. There were three of them. Not just two to replace Harry and Dell. The extra one was, I perceived, to replace whichever of us, Nip or me, was lost in battle. And Peter was trying to get ahead and save himself a trip later. The first was called Crow, and he was in the Nod and Fog mold, small and energetic and liked to roughhouse. Soon enough he was always a part of their games and fights, and it was just as if they'd been born three instead of two. We found ourselves saying the triplets instead of the twins before we knew it. The second boy was Slightly, and we called him that because he was thin and slow to talk and generally more thoughtful than the other boys Peter picked. We could have used a boy like Slightly in the long run, but it wasn't likely that he would have lasted long with those qualities. At least, that was what I told myself later when I was burying him. And the third boy was Sal. Sal wore a brown cap over a head of short black curls and had blue eyes that were always laughing at me. They told me in a thousand ways to stop being so serious and to have more fun. That was what the island was for. Yet Sal was also kind and good to all the boys, especially Charlie, and that made me like him, for no one else thought much of Charlie. The others wouldn't hurt him, but he couldn't keep up with them, and so they didn't think of him. Sal did think of him, and waited for him, and walked next to him while the little boys shyly showed him the best places to dig for worms. Soon enough, Sal was a favourite of everybody's, for he had a way about him of making everyone feel like they belonged. Sal could make you feel happy just by smiling. Those tiny white teeth, flashing, always made me warm in my belly. Some of the happiest days I had on the island were those days before that awful battle day, when Sal and Charlie and I would break away from the others and go off roaming on our own. Peter watched all this and pretended it was fine, that he wasn't bothered in the least that this new boy had taken me away from him even more than Charlie had. He even pretended not to mind about Charlie so much. He pretended, but I caught him watching.
He watched Sal and Charlie like that sneaking, peeking crocodile in his story, the one who waited for his time to come. Peter brought Sal to the island, and Sal changed everything for all of us, forever, though I couldn't know that would happen. I was only a boy then. Part 2. Battle. Chapter 9. I knew that business with the pirate camp burning would cause more trouble than Peter thought it would. He'd burned their camp and fed their captain to a many-eyed and thought that nothing would change between us and them. We'd come a-raiding and they would try to kill us, but it would all be in good fun. Though none of the group that followed Peter that day had survived to tell the tale, it was a certainty that the remaining pirates knew who was at fault. I thought that meant that they'd know who to come looking for when it was time for revenge, and said so. "No," Peter scoffed. "They'll leave. They'll go off sailing somewhere else. Why would they stay? Their camp and all the supplies in it are gone. I didn't burn their ship, and I could have. I left it there so they could go away and find a new captain. Then they'll tell him that he can find the secret to staying young forever on this island, and he'll sail back here, and then we'll all have a grand time fighting each other again." He laughed and clapped my shoulder. "Did you know that they think it's some kind of spring? I don't know where they could have gotten such a notion, but I heard some of them talking about it when I was setting the tents on fire. They think they'll dump out their rum bottles and fill them with the water of youth. Pirates are so stupid."
I didn't really think the pirates were all that stupid. And anyway, who was to say it wasn't the water that kept us all young? I'd lived there for years and didn't know for certain why I was still a boy. I didn't think Peter knew for sure himself. That wasn't a secret I was interested in, anyway. I wanted to know how Peter flew. I'd not mentioned it to anyone else, not even mentioned to Peter that I'd seen him. I tried following him a few times, if I saw him sneaking off on his own, but he always disappeared before I caught him. I was reluctant to spend much time chasing him, as I was still nervous about leaving Charlie alone for too long. Nip did his best to glare death at Charlie and me whenever we drifted into his view. Sal was the best, most reliable boy to leave Charlie with if I was away, but much as I wanted to discover Peter's secret, keeping Charlie safe was more important, and I didn't want Sal to fall under Nip's fury either. Since the day the boys had tried to hang him, the others mostly avoided Nip. He spent almost all his time in the tree watching his purple bruises turn yellow. He tried to reset the bone of his cheek himself, pushing the broken pieces more or less in place and tying a long strip of cloth from his sleeve around his jaw. The necessity of not being able to move his teeth too far to chew meant he couldn't eat much besides soft fruit. That meant he was constantly hungry and roared at any boy who walked too near him. I knew how to make a broth out of deer bones and some certain green leaves that would keep any boy strong. I'd used it plenty of times when the others had a fever and it saw them through. It would have helped Nip heal faster, but that wasn't any secret I'd be sharing with him. If he got weak, or even if he starved to death before battle, it would save me the trouble of killing him later. If I worried about Peter, which I didn't because Peter could take care of himself, I'd have worried about the way Nip watched him too. The bigger boy resented Peter for denying their plot. More than once, I caught him squeezing his fingers together while he stared at Peter like he was daydreaming a strangling. It didn't trouble me as much as it ought to, for Nip couldn't catch Peter on his best day, and Nip was far from his best day. But still, he watched and planned. And waited. On the day we saw the pirates, Peter took us south through the dunes and to the beach near Skull Rock. This beach was a very long stretch of sand, perhaps a mile or two, with jumbled rocks at the east end. On the other side of the rocks was a wet, marshy place where the swamp emptied into the sea. At the west end
was a jutting promontory of forest that curled around the Mermaid Lagoon. The lagoon wasn't visible from the beach. It was on the other side of the trees, which were thick and took the best part of an hour to cross if you went from the beach to the lagoon. Skull Rock was a flat grey rock that looked like a skull facing up out of the water. The top end of the rock curved just like a human head, and it even had two large round depressions set roughly equidistant from each other that seemed to be blank eyes staring up in the sky above the sea. The rock wasn't that far from shore, but you had to swim through some very deep water to get there, and the waves could be rough. It was shallow from the beach for about 20 or so steps, and then suddenly the bottom dropped away, which took a lot of the boys by surprise the first time. The rock was a good place for catching fish, though, and Peter had declared he was sick of deer and rabbit meat. Nip didn't come with us, naturally, just stayed in the tree and brooded. It was 11 days since the almost hanging, and he was probably well enough for the trek through the dunes, but nobody was inclined to persuade him to come along. He'd taken to going off in the forest for short stretches, always returning with something to eat that he didn't share with the rest of us, a rabbit or a bird or a squirrel. His jaw had healed enough for him to eat meat again, but eating it hadn't improved his disposition. Several of the boys were not very good swimmers, which wasn't any trouble when splashing in the shallow Mermaid Lagoon, but quite a bit dangerous in the water near Skull Rock. The mermaids would sometimes help boys who struggled in the lagoon, giving them piggyback rides around. Of course, sometimes they also thought it was fun to watch the boys almost drown. You never could tell with mermaids. Sal cheerfully rolled up his trousers. He wore baggy brown wool trousers from the other place, and couldn't be persuaded to cut them into something shorter and better suited to the climate of the island, and waded in as far as his ankles. "I can't swim at all," he said, and turned his cap around so the brim was on the back of his head. "How about you, Charlie?" Charlie shook his head. "That's all right. The water's nice and cool here, and look, there are crabs," Sal said, beckoning to the smaller boy. He looked at me, then at Sal, who'd crouched in the water to peer at the crabs hidden in spiky pink shells all along the shore. "Go on with Sal. I'm going out to the rock," I said, taking off my coat and deerskin trousers. I carefully laid my knife belt on top of these things and dove into the water. The sea was warm, but the first splash of it was chilly after the heat of the island. I flipped over in the water when I was halfway to the rock and just floated on my back, letting the waves push me this way and that before turning back on my stomach to swim the rest of the way. Nod and Fog and Crow and Peter had stripped down to their skin and swam out to the rock as soon as they reached the beach, yelling about who could get there fastest. We stashed a collection of fishing gear in one of the skull's eyes, covered by a tarp weighted down with heavy rocks. There were nets and lines and hooks, all stolen from the pirates, of course, including the tarp. You could take almost anything from them without them noticing, really. In the early days, Peter and I used to steal things from them but not fight them, sneaking about their camp in the dead of night. They'd wake in the morning and wonder if the island was haunted, and we would watch them from the cliffs above their camp and laugh silently into our hands. This was before they knew that we lived on the island, when the pirates first came there because it was a good place to hide from other pirates, and also from those who would hang them for their crimes. When I climbed onto the rock, the triplets already had the net out. Peter flopped on his back with the sun on his face and let the others go to the trouble of catching the fish he wanted. He squinted at me as I shook the water out of my hair. "Where's your little tail?" he asked. "Did he get eaten by a shark? What a shame that would be." I pointed toward the shore. "He's on the beach, crab hunting with Sal." "Oh, at least that's useful," Peter said. "I like crabs. And perhaps he'll lose a finger if one snaps at him." Kit and Ed were swimming out our way, and a few other boys had gathered around Sal and Charlie. The rest scampered over the beach, collecting coconuts that had fallen from the long-leafed beech trees. They had a fairly sizable pile, though I knew from experience that they wouldn't last long. There was nothing sweeter on a hot day than the milk out of a coconut. "Can't he swim?" Peter asked in a would-be casual voice.
All my boys must be able to swim. This was patently untrue, and he knew that I knew it. Plenty of our boys over the years were unable to swim, and it never bothered him before.
"I won't let you drown him, Peter," I said, my voice mild.
"Who said anything about drowning? I just think it would be safer for him to know how to swim, being that he lives on an island and all."
"Just like you told Nip to take care of Charlie," I said. Peter had been careful not to be alone with me since the incident. His brows knitted together as though he were offended that I would even mention it after so much time. 11 whole days had passed.
"It's not my fault Nip misunderstood," Peter said, his eyes pressed to the corners of their sockets, sly and sure. "And anyway, you'll have your chance to kill him in battle soon enough, and take your revenge for his frightening your little duckling."
"He killed Del," I said. I was trying not to lose my temper over this, trying not to let him draw me out.
"Del would have died anyway. He had that annoying coughing thing like Ambro. I can't believe you'd fight over a boy who was half dead."
And there was my temper, surging up, making me want to grab the nearest rock and smash it against his head until I could see the white skull underneath. I'd had enough of Peter dismissing the boys who were dead. They loved him. It was hard for me to remember why at that moment, but they loved him, and he didn't care what happened to them at all. I don't know what I would have done then, shouted or hit him or picked up that rock, but he spoke again, and it stopped me.
"I know you'll beat him. You always do."
He'd caught me wrong-footed, and the confusion punctured some of my anger.
"What?"
"Nip," Peter said, all earnest sincerity now as he sat up and looked at me.
"I know you'll beat him because he hurt one of the boys, and you always look out for the boys, don't you, Jamie? Even me. Even when I don't deserve it."
He looked terribly contrite. I couldn't believe my ears. Was Peter actually admitting he'd done something wrong? This had never happened before in the history of the island. "Peter, I began, wanting suddenly to mend what was torn between us, to feel the way I'd felt about him always. Peter's eyes widened then, and I saw something I rarely witnessed on his face. Shock. He pointed over my shoulder.
"Jamie, the pirates!"
"What?" I twisted around, half certain this was a joke, expecting Peter to push me face first in the water or some such thing as soon as my back was turned. But Peter wasn't lying, for a change. The pirates were there. Their great tall-masted ship rounded the promontory that sheltered the Mermaid Lagoon. "They never come to this side of the island," I said. It was one of the truths that seemed written into the bones of the island. The pirates stayed on their side by their camp. They might sail away from the island, but they always returned to the same place. They didn't sail all the way around. They didn't trek through the mountains or the forest. They just didn't. And yet there they were, sailing directly toward us.
"They won't be able to get close to the beach," Peter said. "It's too shallow. They'd ground the ship."
"It's not that shallow here by the rock," I said. "And those cannons will reach the shore for certain from here. We've got to get the boys back into the forest." Nod and Fog and Crow hadn't noticed. They were all getting along, for a wonder, and had just hauled a net full of fish onto the rock. Kit and Ed had stopped swimming halfway out to us and were wrestling in the water, splashing and pushing each other under the waves. "None of us have weapons," I said to Peter, for he had that look in his eye. The one that said he'd like to swim out and board the ship. The one that said there was nothing better than killing pirates.
"You take the others back," Peter said almost dreamily.
"What will you do?" I asked. Peter grinned at me and dove into the water. He had nothing but his skin and his brains with him, but I'd no doubt that if he managed to make it aboard that ship, he'd cause havoc.
The other three crouched over the net, arguing how best to bring the fish back to shore. Nod and Fogg wanted to pull the net of live fish behind them. The thinking was that if the net broke or some other catastrophe occurred, the fish could swim free, and this was fairer for the fish. Crow didn't care in the least about what was fair for the fish. He wanted to smash their heads with rocks and then drag them to shore. "You can't do that," Nod said, smacking Crow in the head. "If you smash them, they'll get all bloody, and then sharks come cruising." "The sharks don't come just because there's a little blood in the water," Crow scoffed. "Yes, they do. It happened to us once," Nod said. "Fogg scraped his leg out here on the rock, and when he swam back to the shore, this big old shark followed him the whole way. Jamie and Peter had to beat it away from Fogg, or else I'd have no brother to this day." They could have gone on like this, and I didn't have time to break it up the usual way. I ran across the rock to where they were crouched, and kicked the fish over the side and into the water, net and all.
"Jamie!" Fogg shouted. "We worked for those. Peter wanted fish, and you've lost the net."
"Pirates," I said, and pointed to the ship that was getting closer unbelievably fast. It seemed to cast a shadow on us, a shadow that stretched from the ship back to the shore of the island. They weren't supposed to be there. They just weren't. Nod and Fogg stared at the ship as astounded as I'd been.
"Pirates," Fogg said. "Don't come to this side of the island," Nod said.
"I know," I said. "Look, everyone has to get back to the forest before the cannons start. You three grab Kit and Ed on the way in and go straight back through the dunes. Don't wait for us, all right? I'll collect the others." They nodded and dove into the water. Crow followed, always happy to do what the other two did, even if he didn't understand why it was so astonishing to see the pirates there. I glanced back at the ship again. There was no sign of Peter, not even the bobbing of his head above the water. I hesitated, wondering if I should go after him. I would have, if Charlie wasn't on the beach. But Charlie was on the beach, and then the first cannon boomed. The cannonball left the ship and arced up. For a moment I was mesmerized by the shape of it, by the way it looked small and then got bigger and bigger. And then I realized that it had been launched at me. I leapt for the water, scraping the side of my ankle on the sharp side of the rock. The ball crashed into the rock behind me. I heard it bounce once, then it hit the water, just a finger's length away. I stopped when I felt it whoosh by me, peered into the clear blue water, and watched it fall down, down, down. My ankle bled freely, making a little cloud of red in the water, and the salt stung the wound. I would have worried about sharks, except that I thought any shark would be smart enough to stay away from that pirate ship and its noisy, smoking cannon. Several brightly colored fish darted out of my way as I resumed swimming. The triplets were all enthusiastic swimmers, though not very good ones, and I caught up to and passed them easily. When I stumbled onto the shore, I saw that the rest of the boys had gathered down the beach, where the sand ended, and became that wonderful jumble of rocks to climb on. That was exactly what they were doing, playing some kind of follow-the-leader game with one in front. I thought it might be Billy. His hair was yellow, like Charlie's, and the rest strung out behind him like a long snake. Charlie and Sal were still wading in the water, their backs to the sea. I was amazed that none of them had heard the cannon shot, but then the crash of the surf was very loud by those rocks. I yanked on my trousers and coat and buckled my knife belt around me. Nod and Fogg and Crow and Ed and Kit made it to shore while I did this, and they all scrambled into their own clothing. "Back to the tree," I told them.
"Wait, where's Peter?" Ed said. "Wasn't he on the rock?"
"He's gone to cause trouble for the pirates," I said. Ed grinned, taking all the fun for himself. The pirates hadn't fired again, and I'd expected them to do so right away. It was possible that Peter was causing enough trouble that the pirates were distracted. I waved the others in the direction of the forest and ran barefoot down the beach, leaving my moccasins behind. The scrape on my ankle didn't hurt, but the blood splashed down my foot and onto the sand, making a trail behind me. Sal and Charlie looked up when I was about 20 lengths away from them. the two of them smiling and slightly pink from the sun. "Jamie, look," Charlie called, holding up a large peach-and-white shell. "You can hear the ocean in it."
"Get away from there," I yelled. "There are pirates."
Sal appeared bewildered, but one glance over his shoulder had him hustling Charlie out of the water at a run.
"Take him back to the dunes and then to the tree," I said. "I have to get the rest."
The others were at the very top of the rocks, strung in their long snake tail. Just then Billy stopped, and it seemed he'd just noticed the pirate ship. He pointed at it, and the others peeked around him. There were six of them in that row. Slightly, Billy, Terry, Sam, Jack, and Jonathan. The cannon boomed again, and a second later, they were all gone.
Chapter 10. I'd never seen what a cannonball could do before. I'd seen a lot of blood in my time, though, and a lot of death. But I never saw death like that. The ball tore through Billy first. The rest of them might have been all right, except they were directly behind him, and so that cannonball just ripped through all the boys like a finger flicking over a line of dominoes. It hardly seemed to slow at all, just smashed in their ribs and pulled their hearts and guts out, and then all that was left of them were heads on their bloodied bodies. The ball bounced off the rocks and tumbled in the direction of the marsh. I cried out and ran for them, unable to believe what my eyes told me. They couldn't all be gone. But when I reached the top of the rocks, all six of them were nothing but mangled meat. The pirate ship had anchored near Skull Rock, and I saw a rowboat with five or six of them lowering in the water. I didn't see Peter, and the rest of the boys had disappeared into the forest. I took off my red coat and covered the dead boys, then climbed back down and into the water. I didn't know whether the pirates had seen me up there on the rocks, and I didn't care. I wasn't thinking of anything except killing all of the pirates, every last one. The pirates were not going to follow the boys into the dunes. I wouldn't lose any more of my friends. I would not. I don't remember swimming out to their rowboat. I don't know how I got there so quickly, or how they missed seeing my shadow in the water. They must have been looking into the dunes for the boys who had run that way. I surged out of the water and grabbed one of the pirates closest to me, and he was in the water with his throat slit before the others knew he was gone. I swam under the boat while they were all yelling and shouting and looking for their sinking fellow, and I took another from the other side and did for him the same as the first. There were four of them left now, but they'd been spooked and none of the remaining pirates had managed to see me yet. I swam around under the boat while they peered like idiots over the sides and then gave it a great push. Two of them must have been standing, for they fell in the water and made my task easier. Blood churned everywhere in the water now, spewing from the bodies of the pirates. They couldn't see me in that red fog. I was nothing but a shadow, a sharp-toothed, hungry thing, and when I climbed over the side of the boat, one of them was so terrified by my appearance that he jumped in the water and tried to swim back to the pirate ship. I say tried to, because then the sharks were coming in. He screamed, high and thin, and then the water churned and the scream was gone. The last pirate was stringy and toothless and looked like he might have survived a lot of battles. Any other day, he could have beaten me. Maybe. Any other day but that one. My dagger was in my hand, and his throat tore into that long, open smile. And then I kicked him over the boat so the sharks could have him. I stood there, breathing hard, and wished for someone else to kill. After a moment, I was glad of the boat, for the rage burst and my legs shook and I had to sit down on the bench. All around me the sharks, there were three or four of them, tore into my gifts. Chunks of flesh and bone that the sharks had missed bobbed to the surface for a moment before sinking again. Their huge silver bodies bumped the boat as they swam by, close enough for me to touch. Any other day, I might have had the sense to be afraid.
but not that day. The pirate ship pulled anchor and sailed away again, into the horizon this time. I wondered how many of them were left on that ship. Had they seen me kill all the ones on the rowboat? Had Peter killed more on the ship? I wondered if the pirates were going away forever, deciding that it was no longer worth staying on this island, promise of eternal youth or not. I wondered, in a vague and unworried way, what had happened to Peter. I put my hands to the oars and pulled back to shore. The sharks stayed all around me until I was past the drop-off, and the rowboat scraped against the sand. I stumbled out of the boat and through the water to the dry beach, where I fell face down. I breathed in the smell of the sea salt and the clean sand and the green of the forest and the coppery blood all over my hands, and choked back the cries that wanted to erupt from my throat.
"Jamie?" A little voice, a sweet voice.
"Charlie," I said, picking myself up to my knees. Charlie and Sal stood a few feet away. Charlie clung to the striped shell he'd tried to show me before the cannonball shot. "He wouldn't go without you," Sal said. His face was white and drawn. I scowled at Charlie. "I thought you were going to mind." He shook his head yes, and then no, and then yes again.
"I am. I will. I'll mind you, I promise. Except I didn't want to leave you all alone. We watched from that coconut tree. Sal showed me how to go up and we were safe there if the pirates got to the beach. But the pirates didn't get to the beach." There was a fierce kind of pride in his voice. I realized then they'd seen everything. Seen me slaughter all the pirates and thrown them in the water as shark food. Sal's eyes darted from my face to my blood-covered hands, and something in them made me feel vaguely ashamed of myself. "The pirates," I said, and then the lump rose in my throat, and I could feel the unshed grief there, and I swallowed it because I didn't cry in front of the boys. "The pirates. The cannonball."
"We saw," Sal said. "We saw." I stood up then and dusted all the sand from me. "I wouldn't lose any more of you," I said. Sal nodded, but I could tell that some of the shine was off the island for him, just like it was for Charlie. He'd heard us talk about the upcoming battle and how it was a fight to the death, but somehow I thought he didn't really believe there would be a death, until that day Sal thought it was all just in fun, for Peter said it was fun. Sal didn't understand that Peter's idea of fun was considerably more savage than his.
"We'll help you bury them," Charlie said.
It made me sad then, terribly sad, that this tiny boy was already so inured to death that he knew what came after. I shook my head. "I don't want you to see them. They're all in pieces." "But no," I said. And this time it was gentle. "No. I want you to mind me now. Go back to the tree with Sal. The others should already be there." Charlie's mouth set in a stubborn little line, but I found I couldn't lose my temper with him as I'd done before. "It's my lot, Charlie, not yours," I said. "I look after the boys, and I bury them when they're dead."
"Peter should look after us," he said.
And I'd never heard him so fierce.
"He's the one who brings us here. He's the one who says we'll have adventures and be happy forever." He was only saying what I'd thought many times, and things I'd felt in my own heart. Still, it seemed a betrayal somehow to agree with him.
"Peter only has a mind to play," I said.
so I'm here to look after you all.
We'll help you bury them,
Sal said suddenly.